mediafree.tv podcast network.
I'm recording.
Rolling.
Jesus.
Weirdo.
What more could you want?
Well, for starters, a shower.
This is... Again with this, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 7, Episode 3, A Mate for Life. And now here are your hosts, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Don't be scared.
Oh, God. I was going to say good save, but good save revoked.
This is Dave smashing his keyboard with both fists and his head. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Tara. Hi, is Dave in the hallway right now?
Oh, no, he's present. In body, if not mind.
Do we have any site busyness
a
before
few,
we
I
get
mean,
into this?
No, the usual. You can buy a podcast. You buy an ad on this podcast. You cannot buy a podcast on this ad. Go to previously.tv/ads for information. $100 for a commercial message, $50 for a personal message, $20 for a Dave word if you want Dave to say something after he's done yawning directly into the microphone.
I am sorry.
Are you?
Yeah, I am. I didn't realize I was that close to the mic.
Not as sorry as you're going to be.
You can also purchase t-shirts inspired by this podcast at glarkware.com. By this point, you know what they are. And I will also say we have run after the two episodes that we are recording today. We are out of user challenges. So if you have a challenge that you want us to try at the end of an episode along the lines of the old Kim Reed challenge, Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know, now retired since Dylan has left the show, tweet it at us at AWT90210 or put it on Facebook, but tweet it. only do it on Facebook if you don't have Twitter, I guess. But
Twitter
is definitely the one we'll see more. And you should follow us on Twitter anyway, because sometimes I tweet out GIFs in between podcasts, and that's fun for me. Sarah, are you ready to begin?
I am, except is there any update on the Sex Out 1996
t-shirt? Oh, good question.
We sold one to somebody in Poland.
Uh-huh. So that makes two?
So that makes two. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Good job, Poland.
Yeah. So we can now say that Sex Out 1996 is an international sensation.
Yeah, it's something.
All right, let's begin, shall we?
Yes.
With our D plot, David finds a new home, but that's it for good news. Donna runs into David in the parking lot behind the Peach Pit and finds out that David is moving in with Mark, that guy from the campus TV station who's horny for Kelly. The rent is steep, David says, but he'll be fine once he gets another directing job. Cough. Speaking of, the A-plot is all about Nat and Joan's stupid wedding, but I siloed this bit of it over here because it's less about the wedding than it is about David being a dick in clip two.
Are we still on to shoot Nat and Joan's wedding video tomorrow?
Look, Don, I don't do weddings anymore.
David, we agreed.
Yeah, we also agreed on a partnership, remember? Things change.
Yeah, I guess so.
Look, I talked to Nat and he understands. He's just gonna have his cousin shoot it.
No, I still want to do it.
Fine, then talk to Nat.
And your camera, the good one, can I still borrow that?
Yeah. Here's my address, all right? When you want it, just come pick it up.
Gee, thanks.
You're welcome.
Ooh. God.
I mean, things change, do they?
Yeah. Because
you're still being a twat to her like you've been for the last 4 seasons of the show.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you?
This illusion he has that getting dropped from a management company is going to make things better for his career is so sad, and spoiler alert, it's not going to happen. Spoiler alert, he's about to get dropped officially by the management company, which I thought was already official before this point anyway, but whatever.
You know what else was official? Him forgiving Donna for deciding not to work with him anymore.
Yeah.
So, fuck off.
He's going to forget that a lot in these two episodes.
Yeah.
Also, Donna's hair looks terrible. Please see it in the visual aids on this podcast or at Previously DV.
But get some smoked glass because it's terrible. It's not as bad as it's going to be next time.
Oh,
but
my God, with the braids. Yeah, it's not good. So Mark must come from money because his house has a crazy view. It's like in the Hollywood Hills and a pool. And David thinks they can cover a whole month's rent if he can use the place for a video shoot, of which he currently has none on his calendar, by the way. Mark says that would be fine if his neighbors can be in it. They're beautiful. And we later see a scene that I didn't bother really noting where Donna comes to pick up the camera and a bunch of floozies are in the pool being a Playboy fantasy or something. It's all
floozing.
Very stupid. Yeah, floozing. The morning of the wedding, Donna finds out that MZA officially dropped their contract. Donna doesn't care, but she's worried about David. Oh, I think we all know he'll take it in stride. Just kidding. The first chance he gets to talk to Donna, he's a bitch about it in clip 3.
Got some bad news this afternoon. MZA dropped me. Guess I'm officially a wannabe.
Yeah, they called me this morning.
They called you first?
Come on, David. What difference does it make?
None, I guess.
Well, would it help if I said I was sorry? But I know how much it meant to you.
Well, that's no big deal. I mean, it's not like they're the only game in town, right?
Well, whatever. You're on your own now. Good luck.
Brr. It's cold in here. There must be some Martin in the atmosphere.
But she's not, really. Like, she seems like she really means she's wishing him luck. Like, when he wasn't there, she was saying she was worried about what this was going to do to him. Like, don't worry about him. He's fine. I mean, he's not, but that's because he's an asshole. It has nothing to do with you.
And also, what's with the line delivery?
Yeah.
I got some bad news this afternoon. Hey, boo-boo.
When they meet up again the next day, David badly apologizes for being on edge about the MZA thing, and she's nice about it, which he does not deserve. Shall we move on from this? Because snore.
Yeah. Also, saying that you've really been on edge about something is not the same as saying that you're sorry.
Yeah.
Use the words, mm-hmm. I am sorry, and do not say but after it. You are a but. Kill yourself. Let's move on.
Speaking of kill yourself, Kenny. Surprise! Kenny may not be as separated as Belle thought. So
that was good.
At the Peach Pit After Dark, Kenny flirts over Val's new tennis bracelet like a real straighty until Val changes the subject to business. More seating at the club, computerizing the bar, getting good accent, and selling the place while it's hot. Hush now, Val. A man is talking in clip 4.
Uh-uh.
Uh-uh?
Mm-mm. What's that in English?
Uh-uh from the Latin, uh-uh meaning short-sighted. I think you've got something here, Val. Potential franchise.
You're kidding, right?
No, I'm not kidding. Got an instinct about these things. The same instinct that told me to put together the Wild Wings chicken franchise, which went public last year.
Wild Wings. That was you?
Mm, you got it. Made a lot of investors very happy. Investors that I can go back to with new business. Maybe your business. Why should the House of Blues get all the action?
God, you are so confident.
And why shouldn't I be?
You really think we got something here?
Yes, I do.
Then how do we proceed?
As always in business, carefully and discreetly.
A barf.
I agree.
What?
Here's something I'd like you, Tara, to agree on.
Okay.
If she's just using this money to buy herself a tennis bracelet.
Yeah.
And treat herself. She's not a good bet to franchise anything except bankruptcy, which I'm sure she's about to do. Spoiler.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't get it either. Like, a tennis player also, bracelet is not cheap.
Him?
I know. That's the biggest bummer of all. Like, it's good that she's shorter than him because I'm pretty sure he's thinning on top and that they're using, like, fancy camera angles to hide it.
Yeah. And failing.
Now, do you think at this point in the universe, Wild Wings was actually a fictional franchise?
Yes, Buffalo Wild Wings is the name of the chain.
Yeah, but I think there's a small chain somewhere called Wild Wings. I think it might just be Canada, but I remember seeing a couple in Mississauga when we were there.
Maybe.
I'm sure they weren't about to try to step to Mr. Spelling with that, but
yeah.
I could be wrong.
Anyway. Yeah, it's all stupid. Also, like, why would you franchise a bar? Like, and it's a place that's that shows live music. Like, there's nothing intrinsically, you know, special about it. Like, she's not like she has some kind of awesome menu items. Like, she doesn't even have Captain Crunch chicken or whatever the fuck they have at Planet Hollywood, or whichever one it is. Not Planet Hollywood, Hard Rock Cafe. Whichever one of them has a stupid chicken dish. Anyway,
Don't ask me.
I know you wouldn't know. I've never been to either. Moving on, Val and her crazy leonine hair, which must be seen to be believed in the visual aids.
Oh, my God.
It's nuts.
It's so crazy.
It looks like she literally stuck a fork in a socket. I could not stop clipping photos of it. I was so horrified on her behalf.
She's like a second generation Barbie. Like, it's so big and stiff. That's what it looks like. Like when Barbie had a bob, but it's like the size of like an astronaut helmet. Anyway. She's dropping off wedding centerpieces at the beach club when she looks across the boardwalk and sees Kenny and his nerd glasses at a table. And he totally meets her eye and looks down, and she knows exactly what is happening and heads straight over to introduce herself to Diane, referring to Kenny as her husband, saying that he's helping with her business, and Diane does not correct her on their status because, duh, of course he is still her husband, not her ex. And Kenny overexplains about Jim and how he knows Val and whatever, and then their stupid kid takes off, so Diane has to go retrieve him, and when she's gone, Kenny and Val have as much of a fight as they can in clip 5.
What are you doing, Valerie?
What? We don't have anything to hide, do we? You guys just go ahead and do your thing.
Ooh.
I mean, I don't know. Like, this Valerie is what I like. It's just sort of like, okay, fuck you then.
Right. So then,
but
like,
then
this is the
end.
She's
so stupid the rest of the time.
Exactly. Like, what is so great about this guy that you're going to, I mean, I know he gave you cash, but that's not enough to buy you forever, I have to think. Whatevs. As she walks away, he does this jaw clench that's very George is getting upset, which I gift, and you can also see that in the visual aids. Kenny later shows up at the Peach Pit after dark and admires Val's butt for a while before quietly saying hello and scaring her, and she is frosty and tells him he's playing games in clip 6.
Are you or are you not getting a divorce?
I am getting a divorce. But it just makes good fiscal sense not to give Diane any ammunition beforehand, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Good.
So what are you doing here?
Came by to look at your books again. I want to look at last year's P&L and write up an investor's prospectus.
Well, we went over this. I sent you copies. Didn't you get them?
Yeah, I got them. I got just about everything I need.
Well, so what are you doing here? What?
I am falling in love with you, Val.
Are you, though? Are you?
Yeah.
Also, I like how he says P&L, like it sounds like he's saying penile. Yes, Dave.
I have a chicken wing update.
Oh, good.
It's okay, Wild Wing singular that I was thinking of in Mississauga, currently enjoying a 2.5-star rating. There is, in fact, Buffalo Wild Wings in Mississauga as well. And FYI, Mississauga is like a satellite town in Toronto, of Toronto.
Yes.
Which enjoys a 4-star rating, the big chain everybody knows. Not to be confused with other entries from the Mississauga chicken wing universe. Wingaporium.
Oh, my.
The Wingery.
Classy.
And my favorite, Wings Up! !! Mississauga.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Come on.
That could also be a morning show.
True.
About chicken.
Yeah. All right. I have nothing else to say about Val, except as we already did say, this is a bummer.
Yeah. She's an idiot, but oh well.
Speaking of idiot bummers, Kelly in our B plot. St. Kelly bestows her friendship on a person with AIDS.
Sorry.
Yes.
If I may for a second.
Yes.
There is not a dedicated wing place, but they're showing up in the results. Walk Away Chinese Food and Wings. Why would you name your restaurant Walk Away?
You know what would be awesome is if they named it Walk Away, AWEIGH, and it was only stir-fried seafood.
Uh-huh. That's not bad.
And a morning show about Mississauga.
I say that, but Walk Away has 4.2 out of 5 stars.
See?
There you go.
Right. Shows what you know about business.
More stars than I'm giving this B-plot.
Oh my God, no kidding. So over at Friendship House, Kelly is clearing dishes as a resident who I totally forgot was played by Michael Stoyanov, formerly Blossom's oldest brother, the one that had the drug problem.
I know him.
Yeah, we know him. Dave and I have met him because he's friends with friends of ours, Jeff and Wendy. Jeff Drake, co-host of our sister podcast, Wine and Roses.
Well, it's funny because when we met him, it was like literally the day after his arc.
Unjustified, yeah.
It came to an end, Unjustified. Mm-hmm. And I was like, how do I know you? And he's like, maybe from Blossom. I was like, never watched a second. Wait a second, you're Druggy Dan or Druggy Dave, whatever it was,
yeah,
from Justified, and yeah, that was fun.
Yeah,
yeah, he's a nice guy.
He's super nice. Yeah. Retroactive congratulations to him on this arc. Anyway, this guy whose name is Jimmy is playing a shell game with meds and coconut shells. It seems like it's in kind of poor taste for the residents, but what do I know? And his fellow resident Dougie, who he's doing the trick for, is too gaunt to have a sense of humor, apparently. And in the kitchen, Kelly cheerfully tries to hustle out another resident whose name we find out is Hal, and so that she can finish the dishes. But Hal thinks she is bullshit, and he is correct in clip 7.
You should go enjoy yourself. Get off your feet. You feel better.
Will I?
They say that laughter is the best medicine.
You people come and go, and I'm just going.
Hal.
I mean, first of all, to tell a man who's dying that laughter is the best medicine is a death by punchable offense.
For sure.
Second of all, what is the pronunciation? Laughter. Like, oh, I'm sorry, Kelly Kennedy. What? I think laughter is the best medicine. What the fuck? Also, shut up. And I hate this arc so much because it's completely unclear. Like, this is not a hospice. This is not how people in hospice look or act.
No.
What with all the walking around and being
dressed.
Snarky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, they're actively dying. That's what hospice is for. Mm-hmm. This is like a halfway house.
Yeah.
Which is fine, but then just make it that, I don't know.
I know.
I hate this whole arc so much, and I hate that they apparently have no other friends except her now, or Jimmy doesn't. Ugh.
Yeah. I will also say the other problem with this storyline is that it doesn't involve Hal just walking around the house behind Kelly and insulting her while she does everything, because that's what I want in a show.
Yeah, or like licking stuff. That would be fine also.
Later, Kelly is straightening up a den when Jimmy is in there playing solitaire and brings our hero Hal. He brings up our hero Hal in his sour mood earlier. Heroic Kelly says she was out of line. She can't blame Hal since she's not in his shoes, but Jimmy credits her for being there volunteering and asks what made her choose a, as he calls it, death house. She thinks that's a little harsh, and he says her sense of humor hasn't sunk as low as his, and when she finally gives him an answer, it is bad, in clip 8.
I've asked myself that over 100 times.
But, cool.
Well, at first I thought it must be out of some insidious need to punish myself.
For what?
Past sins.
Being a bit? Punishing God complex.
Right. But then things sort of flip-flopped, and, I don't know, somehow I thought that working here could be life-affirming. To be honest with you, I don't know what I'm doing here.
May I make a suggestion? Stop rationalizing it. Just do the gig for course credit. Simple enough.
Yeah.
Try to keep it simple with the residents around here, too. Don't coddle them. Just, do what needs to be done and be mindful.
Mindful. Right.
Look at us. You're dusting and I'm waxing philosophical. How about a game of gin rummy?
Sure.
Medication time. Let's see what's on the menu today, shall we? The usual mix. Antiretrovirals, painkillers, antidepressants, and, my favorite, trimethoprim. Yummy.
You know, I have to say, You look a lot healthier than the rest of the people here.
Just another one of my marvelous illusions, love.
How far down the road are you?
Some nights I actually see the light at the end of the tunnel. Cut the cards. Let's deal.
Oh my God, Kelly, don't tell someone who's in the process of dying of AIDS that you're volunteering where he lives because you thought it would be life-affirming for you.
Also, how far down the road are you? Unfortunately, not so far that we can't still hear the sound of your goddamn annoying baby voice. Not appropriate.
No.
Not appropriate.
It's really not.
I hate her so much.
Fucking awful. Anyway, we will find out more in the next episode about how little training Kelly got for this job, if any. I'm going to say
in
none.
Life off the outside the Amish community. Oh
yeah.
My God.
Terrible. Later, alas, it is not over yet. Kelly stops by Jimmy's room to give him his novelty glass eye and take his dinner plate. He says he's still eating, so he asks if she'll be there tomorrow, which she won't since she's going to a wedding. We're about to get to it. Don't get excited. And he loves weddings and asks for all the details, but we know the story, of course. He says he was married once. He was a wonderful man. Kelly asks him to tell her about him, and Jimmy says he will some other time, but for now he'd like tea. And at the door, she says she thinks they're going to be good friends, and he gallows humorously agrees they'll be lifelong pals. I get it.
Oh, God. What a way to go.
I know.
Like, you go to hospice, you're trying to face the end, and then this happens to you?
I know. The living
envy
the dead.
Hasn't Jimmy been through enough?
After the wedding, Kelly brings leftover wedding cake to Friendship House, and I made a gif, which I sent to Sarah last week, of Hal being like, yum. It's like the moment in Walking and Talking where Liev Schreiber's like, hello, cookies, except
cookies?
It's Hal with the wedding cake.
He takes, and there's like five different, like, what, there's a bunch of stuff going on the topper, which, like, first of all, don't give the topper to strangers.
I know, I thought
that part,
too.
But
yeah.
He takes off like one thing, but then there's all those like weird sugar beads on it, but he just doesn't care. He takes like a butcher knife and is like, chop, like
best.
why even bother with that nicety, Hal? Just bury your face in it. You're dying. Live a little.
Honest to God. Even more hilariously, he does not acknowledge Kelly at all. And Jimmy follows her into the kitchen to do dishes with her and ask about the wedding. He wants to know why she didn't bring a date, but she says she's not dating. And I would like to know why he cares, except I don't. And we know all this anyway. Moving on to our A plot. Geriatric wedding / pregnancy stuff. So we're getting ever closer to Nat and Joan's wedding. Steve and Brandon are at the airport to pick up her daughter. First initial L is all we know because they have a sign. The only photo Joan had of her that wasn't packed, she's moving also, is from when the kid was a kid, because this is the past and no one has pics on their phones because no one has phones. What do we know about L? Well, clip 9.
What is she, about 22 years old now?
And a theater and dance major.
Well, you could always put a bag over her head.
What?
I mean, Kay? Is that a thing now?
Why are you assuming she's ugly? Like, Joan is not ugly. Also, let anyone fuck you who will let you, Brandon. Anyway, Elle is Lily.
Yeah, it's like, once again, the whole, like, free spirit who absolutely must fuck Brandon storyline. It's so tired.
It is.
Can't.
So she shows up. Her name is Lily. Since I know you were all concerned about it, she's cute. She also looks like she's had a few cocktails on the flight, unless that was just me. She, like, looks a little bit tipsy.
I think that's just the actor not being very good.
Could be.
Sorry.
She's into Steve immediately and takes his arm until he mentions Claire, his girlfriend, and she resiliently transfers her interest to Brandon. She flirtily says she's only brought carry-on, mostly bikinis. Whomst will take her to the beach? Cut over to the boring old person discussion of wedding and pregnancy, which I have redacted. You're welcome. Joan can't wait to see Lily, the only one of her crappy children who could make it to her wedding. Crappy wedding. She's happy she could get time away from her dance company, which I assume means we're soon going to find out she's actually a stripper. This is where I was in my notes. I did not watch ahead. I just have seen TV before. Spoiler alert, she is a stripper. When Steve shows up, Joan asks how Lily looked, and Steve says, foine, and Claire gives him a sharp look, and maybe people would say things about like that about you, Claire. If you didn't crimp your hair like that, it is hideous. See it in the visual aids if you dare.
And then the bangs are held up by a functional barrette, in front of which a non-functional little airplane plastic barrette has been just jammed into it for decoration.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up, 90s.
Not good. Yep. Brandon takes Lily to her hotel room. Guess where? The Bellage. She's impressed, but she also wants a shower and takes off her wrap dress in one motion and then enjoys how shy Brandon is about her extremely Hanes her way underwear set. It's like the boy-iest
with the
underwear.
Easy Spirit pumps. Yeah. But then again, like, and then he sits down on the coffee table in her room. Like,
yeah.
Get your butt off the surface and put it on the couch where butts belong. Mm-hmm. Dickhead.
Yes. Instead of leaving while she showers, he sits on the coffee table, as Sarah said, and yells questions to her about her career. And she says it's true she was trained in classical dance, but the fact that she's showing off her moves in pumps suggests that, and I am, in fact, right about what she does now. She also finishes on the bedpost, so there you go. At the beach club, where the wedding is happening, Brandon introduces Lily to Donna and Claire, and Steve shows up with wine and suggests getting up to some kind of pre-wedding debauchery, but Brandon is babysitting the maid of honor. Steve asks what her story is. Brandon will let him know. And when Claire comes over, they compliment her on her very sparse decorations, by the way, which for some reason she takes as her cue to announce that she's never getting married herself. Sensing a fight coming on, Brandon leaves and Steve shows how little he understands Claire in clip 10.
Very clever, Arnold. I know what this is. You're using your reverse feminine psychology on me, aren't you?
What?
Oh, please. If you say you're never getting married, you think that I'm going to feel challenged and change my mind about never wanting to get married. That's it, isn't it?
Oh, you feel the same way?
I didn't say that.
Well, what are you saying then?
I'm just saying never say never, that's all. Boy, you're really throwing me a curve, Claire.
I don't get what the big deal is. Are we getting married tomorrow?
Oh.
Well, then.
And there she goes. Nice, huh? Go figure.
Yeah, my advice is give her 25 years.
Why would we take advice from you? I mean, it's not that I don't care about Claire, except I don't, because they keep sticking her in these plot backwaters and making her continually get all sobby about her mom, who we never met, and I don't care.
Yeah, and also that only became an issue for her like a season and a half after we met her. 2.5 seasons.
Yeah.
God, it's been a long time. And then apparently what Lily wanted to do is go to a strip club to see a friend of hers who works there. And she starts knowledgeably describing the talent on stage, which is when Brandon finally catches up with me/the rest of us in clip 11.
Hold on a second. You're not a ballerina, are you?
Well, let's put it this way. I've never danced Swan Lake, but I'm pulling in $5,000 a month as a Tiger Lily.
Tiger Lily? Well, let me guess. Your mother has no idea.
Not a clue, and I'd appreciate it if you would keep it between us.
Tiger Lily for a girl named Lily as a stripper name is so basic.
Oh, God, it's so basic. But, you know, she's stripping in Easy Spirit pumps, so it's a budge operation, apparently.
Good point. Lily shows off her cool girl credentials by encouraging Brandon to agree with her that the girl on stage is sexy, but as soon as they've sat down, Brandon wants to leave because across the stage are Nat and Steve. Nat comes over to say hello, and Brandon orders Lily to let him do the talking, of course. And everyone is embarrassed, but Lily says if she were a guy, she'd have brought Nat there herself. And then the dancer that Lily knows comes over and hugs are exchanged, and Brandon's all annoyed because he told her to let him do the talking, and she is not, and this occurs, clip 12.
Are you gonna work here? Oh, gosh, you know they're hiring now with full medical. Yes!
Did she say work? Did she?
Oh, boy.
The only good thing about this scene is Steve's lascivious face, which is always funny.
Yeah, and he also has a $5 bill stuck to his forehead at some point. Love that guy.
He does. Brandon brings Lily back to her hotel room. He's pretty sure Nat won't say anything to her mother because then he would have to explain why he was there. But Brandon encourages Lily to tell Joan the truth as if it's any of his business to give any advice to someone he met this morning. But Lily says that she's Joan's precious angel, and now with the wedding and baby and stuff, it's too much, and Brandon says he gets it, and I'm sure Lily is very relieved. And he tries to exit because he doesn't know he's made himself irresistible in clip 13.
Ugh.
Brandon, you know, most guys, when they find out that their date is an exotic dancer, the horns come out and suddenly they have all these expectations. But not you. You would never expect anything.
No, never.
That's why we're really gonna enjoy this.
Well, I was talking about fucking you with a bag over your head earlier, but you know.
I notice he doesn't have any problem with her taking that job.
The next morning at the Walsh house, Steve is suffering with a hangover until Val says Brandon didn't come home, and then he perks up lasciviously, which is, again, amusing. And oh God, Jesus Christ, Brandon's white wedding jacket. Like, I assume the wedding is being held in it. It is so big. See it in
the
visual aid.
Did he borrow it from David in season 3? It's so, so big.
It's like down to his knees. It's like Steve Harvey's
jacket.
It's like
a shoebox. God, it's bad.
Steve accosts Brandon in the parking lot about what happened with him and Lily, but it's too stupid to describe, except for Brandon saying it's a blur, clip 14.
A blur! I love a blur! And we love you, Steve.
Making his own fun. Everyone wants to get Nat out of there because he's actually working the breakfast rush on the day of his wedding, but he's in a daze and clearly choked up with nerves. Finally, Brandon has to physically drag Nat away from the grill, still screaming instructions to Willie, and I made a gif of, like, Willie crossing in front, like, whatever. Please see it in the visual aids. It's a great moment for Willie.
There's also a clip in the visual aids of everyone, none of Nat's actual age-appropriate friends, just the gangsters, in the hospital waiting room. Spoiler, I guess. And they brought the cake, and Willie is just totally unconcernedly eating the cake and focused on the correct things. Thank you, Willie.
At the beach apartment, the girls help Joan get ready because, speaking of age-appropriate friends and who has none, she has no friends, it seems.
She also has come to pregnancy term. Like, we're told she's 2 weeks away from delivering.
Yeah.
Which, whatever. Like, talk about advanced maternal age. Like, they would induce it. They would induce that. Trust me.
But also, if Steve... Also, go ahead.
She had morning sickness in, what, May or June?
Yeah.
And wasn't showing?
Yeah. No.
Is she a cat?
Right.
That's too fast.
It's way too fast. Yeah, you don't have morning sickness into the second trimester, was my understanding.
I mean, some people do, but that clearly was not the brief, so yeah.
Right.
Shut up, show. Anyway, continue.
Seriously. Lily's also there, of course, and tells Joan how much she likes Nat, what a great talk they had the previous night about dancing to your own beat and choices and whatever. And we also find out that Claire can't just have any of a number of perfectly valid reasons not to want to get married. It's just all about her dead mom in clip 15.
It's funny. She used to make such a big deal about my wedding day. Like it would be some kind of fairy tale. She even wanted me to marry a prince.
Your mom sounds bullshit. Sorry, Dad. You know. Sorry.
Not without my mom.
Claire, do you think your mom would want to deny you a moment like this?
No, it's not that.
I wouldn't be surprised if she's looking down at you right now with my mom, wishing you all the love in the world.
Maybe. Thanks.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah, or she's super disappointed because you didn't go with Prince Carl of Pavonia. Like, your mom sounds like she was kind of annoying and extra. No offense.
Yeah.
Kathleen Robertson is really acting the shit out of this stuff, too, and it's, you know, it's shit. Ugh. Mm-hmm. Boo.
Also, they're like all there to deal with Joan's wedding hair, and it's the same hair she has every single day, except they have like a flower crown on it. I'm so mad about her dumb hair.
Could anyone on this program get some anti-frizz product, please?
Mm-hmm.
So bad.
Apparently not. In the wedding setup, Val enjoys needling Kelly in clip 16.
Joan's daughter's pretty striking, huh?
Hey, how are you, Lily? This is Lily. This is Joan.
Yes, she's very beautiful. She and Brandon have been getting along. You know, he didn't come home last night.
had to leave the stomps Kel. In.
Oh.
Shut up. Team Val forever. Yeah. And then like 10 seconds into the ceremony, of course, Joan's fucking water breaks. And this is so urgent, they can't even get her up to maternity at the hospital. But she makes everyone stop in the hall and declare that she won't have the baby until she's a married woman. So many reasons this is stupid. First of all, if the legitimacy thing is what you're hung up on, like, too late, like, strictly speaking, honestly.
Second of all, once you get the license, you're basically married in, as far as the state is concerned. So mm-hmm. unless you don't have a license, there's no problem. Go have your kid.
Yeah. Third, Kelly is there.
Before you die.
Yeah.
Sorry.
People in the thread have been talking about, like, wait, how old is Joan? Like, apparently the actress was in her 50s at this point. So, like, the idea that she would get accidentally pregnant when they used a condom is a very, very remote possibility.
Yeah, Nat's boys can't just swim. They're like, the Magnificent 7 Million.
Anyway, the officiant
Why
is
are
all,
we thinking about this?
I don't know. Why did the officiant come with them to the hospital? Don't know, but he did. And so he quickly marries them and the cartoony labor screams resume immediately. And when everyone is having cake in the waiting room, Kelly shoots hate eyes across it at Brandon and Lily. And this all happens, clip 17.
Oh, Joan's daughter seems to be moving quickly.
Well, I think Joan's really proud of her.
I want you to know I'm not promiscuous.
Now, what would ever make me think that? Champagne?
Fuck you. Fuck both of you. Kelly, of all people, to be slut-shaming someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Eat a bee.
Yeah. Anyway, Nat comes out. It's a boy, Francesco, after his dad, but they can call him Frankie, and Nat is ready for champagne and a speech no one wants or needs delivered from atop a coffee table. And what is with people using coffee tables wrong in this episode? Stop. And if you think I'm going to clip Nat's emotional speech about how the gangsters are his guardian angels because they brought Joan home to him, you're fucking high. But it winds up with this, clip 18.
So now can I call you Papa?
Sure, if I can call you Tiger Lily.
No, you can't.
Ew.
Gross.
No.
That's your stepdaughter, dude. Gross.
Bear.
So Claire, having hurried out in the middle of Nat's boring congressional filibuster, Steve chases after her and sits her down to make her listen. He also gets emotional at weddings, he says, because they bring up bad feelings about his parents' divorce and she starts crying.
Oh, sorry, that was not planned.
And yet, it works.
Wasn't it?
She starts crying as she says she's thinking her mom is gone, so she'll never see Claire get married, so forget it, which she says she knows is stupid. Steve understands. Claire realizes she's afraid if she really lets herself love someone, she'll end up losing him. But after listening to Nat, she thinks you have to let love lead you or else you'll end up alone. And Steve loves that she's so logical, which none of that was. But anyway, letting love lead them is their new strategy. And Brandon sees Lily off at the airport.
What's happening with Sarah?
She's dying. Even though she's super horny for Brandon, she says they shouldn't have any thoughts of continuing a relationship of any kind. Good instinct. She said she was married once, which she announces for no reason. But now she prefers to be a free spirit. And if he's ever in Cleveland, he should call her up and fuck her, I guess. And then she's gone, not to be missed. Back at the hospital, remember in the premiere when Brandon made a joke about Steve's tongue in his ear to get points off a redneck? Well, clip 19.
You ever think about having a family?
Sure, I guess. I mean, why are we all here unless we find love and pass it on?
Exactly. You know, that's a really beautiful thought, Brandon. Will you marry me? Now, I know it's a big decision, but you can take your time.
Oh, what, not even a hug?
Oh, the outrage is great.
And then everyone
but
has
shut up, Brandon.
Yes. Then everyone has to look at Nat and Joan and Frankie in the nursery, and Brandon and Steve and Donna and David all do a four-way thumbs up, and I made a gift that I kind of love, and it immediately went into my reactions folder. So that was the big takeaway from this episode for me. All right, most valuable player. Frankie who got born?
I was going to say Frankie, because at least he, I mean, okay, it led to a bunch of TV labor stuff.
It did.
But at least he stopped the TV wedding stuff.
That's true. Good point.
And he's cute.
He was cute. He is cute. Least valuable player. I really hate David in these episodes. I know Brandon is awful, but David is just so insufferable with his like delusions of careerativity. Like, I just need him to shut up and go away.
I'm going to go with Kelly.
Good choice.
They say choice. Laughter is the best medicine. I don't know what I'm talking about. When are you going to die? Shut up. When are you going to die?
Yes, Dave.
Are you done with least valuable player?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Here we go. 5 Mississauga chicken wing restaurants the cast and characters of 90210 would open. I will go first.
Okay.
Donna's Wing Dings.
Okay. Shanhan Doherty's Chicken Shack.
Okay.
I got another one you can think
go
of.
Go ahead.
Nat's 0 cent wings. Emporium.
Rush to Wing Mint by Rush Sanders.
Ooh. Okay.
All right, take us home, Sarah.
Oh no, too much pressure.
It's too much pressure.
Brandon's cock of nothing, and that makes 5.
Sure. There you go.
Or Beakerly Hills.
Yep.
Or Donna's budget breasts. Oh, wings and thighs. Yep. Okay, there we go. Finally. Jeez. Next time I'm again with this. The incurable disease that kills lovers fails to do us a solid and take out either Kelly, whoever styled Tori Spelling like an irradiated toadstool, or fucking Brandon. You'll want to grab that knife out of Jimmy's hand and plunge it into your eye when you get a load of our visual aids for this and every other again with this episode on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that site on Twitter at previouslytv and this podcast at AWT90210. I'm potential franchise Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is last year's P&L, or penile, Tara Ariano. Okay. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And dancing is Tiger Lily, our producer, David T. Cole. He's on Twitter at Clark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
God, why didn't I do something about Val's breasts? Fuck.
Rad, hot, and dangerous to eat.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.